We are continuing our study in the 34th Psalm. In our last lesson, we had gotten through the 6th verse. And in this psalm, according to the title, David is giving thanks for God having delivered him from a very painful and difficult situation. The title says that it is a psalm of David when he changed his behavior before Abimelech, who drove him away and he departed. Now this time was back when Saul was persecuting David so severely that David felt he had to leave the country. He was having to leave his home nation of Israel, and he fled down to Gath, which is one of the Philistine nations. And there he sought refuge by the king there named Achish. Achish was his given name, and the name Abimelech was the name given to any king that ruled over the land of Gath. Well, once David got down there, instead of being given refuge, the people discovered who he was. They realized how powerful he was, that he was a very great man in Israel, and so they looked upon him as a threat. And they began to tell Achish that this man was so great that he seemed to be greater than Saul himself. And so David became afraid of what they might do to him. He feigned madness. He pretended that he was mad. He went around writing on the doors of the gate. The Bible says that he scrabbled on the doors of the gate and let his spittle fall on his beard. So in this state of apparent madness or acting like he was an idiot of some kind, he then posed to be no threat to the king of Gath, and so Achish sent him away. He was apparently forced to leave, but it was really a blessing for David because he was then given freedom. He was given relief from whatever the trouble he might have had before him there in Gath, and so he fled to the cave of Abdullah. So according to this title of the 34th Psalm, that's the event that this psalm is written about. Not necessarily written at the time that it happened, but as David looked back on this situation and this time of his life, then he composed this psalm, and it's a thanksgiving of him being given relief from his trouble during that time. And so the first 6 verses have to do with David's thanksgiving for his deliverance. Beginning in the 7th verse, which is where our lesson begins today, he talks about the privilege of confiding in God. The privilege of being able to go to God when we're in a time of trouble, and to know then that we're going to have this great assistance from God. Verse 7 says, "The angel of the Lord encampeth round about them that fear him, and delivereth them." This mention of the word angels is very interesting to us, for we find angels mentioned many, many times in the Bible. They are heavenly beings, but God many times uses them for work here upon this earth. We have reason to believe that angels are involved in our affairs. If we are the followers of God, if we are the children of God, then we have angels that are dealing with us, that are carrying out the work of God for us in our regard. Angels are mentioned many, many times in the Old Testament and the New Testament. They are involved with the work of our Savior while here upon this earth. They're spoken of many times in the book of Revelation as being a messenger of God or bringing some kind of a message from God. They are mentioned in other parts of the New Testament. For example, in 1 Corinthians 11, where the Apostle Paul is talking about the fact that a woman should have long hair, and that it's a shame for her to be shorn or shaven, and he speaks of this long hair as being the power upon her head, or a sign of authority, and it says she should have this sign of authority because of the angels. That is, the angels are involved in this, and the angels recognize the kind of behavior that we have here upon this earth, so we act in such a way as to not offend the angels. So the teaching by the Apostle Paul in 1 Corinthians 11 is that a woman should have long hair, uncut, unshaven hair, so that she shows that she is under the authority of the man. And this is a sign of that authority, and he says she's to have it because of the angels. So we're to recognize that angels are involved in our affairs, and we're to so live as to not offend the angels. That is, when we do something that's wrong, something that's disapproved of by God, we also have to feel like that angels are not pleased with this either. This is offensive to them. It'd be like if we love our God, and we're in the presence of somebody who is using the name of the Lord in vain, it's offensive to us. We do not like to see our Lord treated that way. And so we cannot approve of it. We cannot have pleasure in it. And so we do not want to do something to make an angel not have pleasure in us. So we have to believe from all that's said about angels in the Bible that angels are used by God for our benefit. So this mentioned here in the 7th verse, the angel of the Lord encampeth round about them that fear him and delivereth them. He's talking about the people of God, those that are trusting in God. The angel of the Lord, not any one particular angel necessarily, but an angel. Maybe even it could be a group of angels. But the angel of the Lord, that is some messenger that the Lord has sent, some heavenly being that is in the care of the Lord, has been sent to help those. So this angel of the Lord encampeth round about them. To encamp means to literally pitch your tent. And this would mean that the angel then has literally taken up a dwelling or an abode in the vicinity of this person that the Lord is going to bless. The angel of the Lord encampeth round about them that fear him. Those that fear the Lord. Those that have a respect for him. Those that have an honor of his nature. They do trust in him. Believe in him, and they live that way. They live so that they have a reverence and a respect for God. They do not live in such a way that they are disrespectful of God. So, campeth round about them that fear him, and delivereth them. Whatever the problem is that they are in, this deliverance is brought about, and it's taught here very plainly that it's brought about by the hand of this angel. The Lord uses angels as his tools, as his messengers, as his means to bring about whatever he wants to have happen. And when he wants good to happen to someone, then he can use an angel to bring this about. An angel that we do not see, we do not encounter physically, we're not aware of his presence. But nevertheless, the angel is there with the full power of God and has the ability to deliver them. So this is a wonderful little verse. The angel of the Lord encampeth round about them that fear him, and delivereth them. If we can just know that and believe that, then it's a source of great faith in God. It's a source of strength, of building us up, of giving us courage, of giving us the incentive to certainly want to be an acceptable follower of God. Just to know that we'd have the angel of the Lord working for us, working with us, camping right there by us, and giving us the deliverance, giving us the protection, that is certainly a very comforting thought. It is a situation that gives us great peace. In verse 8 he says, O taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man that trusteth in him. Up to this point, David has been telling about his experience and trying to persuade others to believe in and to know this true and living God by virtue of what David has experienced, what God has done for him, how God has given this great deliverance. And he tells about how God will deliver, how God will send the angel to encamp round about and to give you the protection and the deliverance. But in verse 8, he now invites those that are listening to him to make their own test, to make their own experience, to have their own experience. He says, O taste and see that the Lord is good. To taste means that we eat a little bit of something, and we see what the flavor is for ourselves. A taste cannot be truly described. There's no way to define a taste without somebody being able to experience it themselves. Unless you've tasted a certain thing, all the descriptions in the world of what that taste is not going to be accurate until you're able then to taste it yourself. So this is what he invites a person to do, is to taste. That is, you take some of God yourself, some of this true and living God into yourself. You taste it. You see what the flavor is, and you let it become a part of you. When we taste something, then it becomes a part of us. Our bodies absorb it. And if we like it, of course, then we're going to want more of it. If we do not like it, then we can say right there, this is something I don't like. So taste and see. The word see means to learn with the mind, to let the intelligence then of the body also be involved in this. So taste and see. It's like if you were picking up some food and you looked at it to see that it looked very palatable, it looks like it's clean and wholesome, then you taste of it and see that it also has a very beneficial and pleasant taste. So that's what he says to do about the Lord. Taste and see that the Lord is good. Try the Lord yourself. You experience the Lord. And he's going to tell how to do that. You experience the Lord. You have the Lord to assist you in your times of trouble, and then you're going to see that what I'm telling you is the truth. He says, blessed is the man that trusteth in him. This is the way you taste him. This is the way you see him. This is the way you get to experience him. That is to trust in him. Blessed is the man that trusteth in him. Of course, you must know God. You must know some of the character and nature of God. You must be able to approach God by having become obedient to his will before you can trust him. But to trust him is to truly place our confidence in him. Whatever our need, whatever our problem happens to be, we place our confidence in God. And then we allow God to lead us, to guide us, to deliver us, to direct us in whatever path he would have us to go. And we believe that God's going to do it. And so then we have a total commitment to God. So blessed is the man that trusteth in him. To trust in him is to be then allowed to taste of him and to see him. And that's what David's inviting his readers to do. Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man that trusteth in him. David is so sure that once we have tasted, once we have seen the Lord, that he is good, that we're going to be convinced of this fact, that he then says in verse 9, O fear the Lord, ye his saints. Fear the Lord, ye his saints. The saints are those that are the followers of God. I would like to state again that this word saint refers to anyone who is in the household of God. Today, anyone who's a member of the church is a saint. It's not a matter of somebody having to be dead for 50 years and then declared by some special ordinance to be a saint. If you're a member of the church, if you're a follower of God, you're a saint. And so you then must act as a saint. And the very most appropriate action of a saint is to fear the Lord. Have this respect for God. Have this feeling that we're dealing here with the true and living God. This is a very serious matter. This is nothing for a person to take lightly. This is nothing for somebody just to brush off and to not give any serious consideration to. Fear the Lord, his saints. And then he concludes by saying, for there is no want to them that fear him. Those that truly fear God, those that truly are his followers, those that respect him as they should, he says there is no want to them. Stating that they're going to be taken care of by God. That's simply what is being said. It does mean that there'll never, ever be a time of want, that you may never be hungry or never live in a place less than what you'd like to have, or maybe never wear clothes that are lesser quality than you might like. But it does mean that God is going to take care of you, and that in general, you're going to be taken care of much better for fearing the Lord than you would be if you didn't fear him. If you're a person that didn't fear God, your situation, your physical condition would be worse than if you do fear God. And certainly this is true of the spiritual condition. Your spiritual condition would be very, very tragic compared to what it is if you do fear God. In 1 Timothy 4, verse 8, the Apostle Paul states this principle quite plainly. There he says, for bodily exercise profits little, but godliness is profitable unto all things, having promise of the life that now is, and of that which is to come. This is a faithful saying and worthy of all acceptation. So godliness, this fear of the Lord that David's talking about here, it's profitable unto all things. It helps in everything that we do that would be beneficial for us as a human being. To be godly, to have the fear of the Lord, is going to give you an advantage. It doesn't matter what you do, you're going to have an advantage. It's profitable in the life that now is, this present, temporal, everyday life, and it also is profitable in that which is to come. So we definitely have an advantage not only in this life, but in the next life. In the next life, those that do not fear God have no hope. They have no promise at all of any kind of salvation, any kind of a continuation of the blessings of God. So the advantage then is twofold. The advantage of life now and the advantage of that which is yet in the future. So there's no want to them that fear him. Now, this doesn't mean that a Christian will never have any want, but he's speaking here in the generality of things. In general, you're going to want less being a Christian than you would want in your same condition not being a Christian. Or in our belief that God will take care of us, our true conviction that there will be no want if we fear Him is a part of our trust in Him. If we doubt this, if we really aren't believers in this fact, then we really are not trusting in Him, and then that disqualifies us for being in this condition of having no want, actually. This idea is expressed also in Isaiah chapter 33, beginning with the 15th verse. There he says, "He that walketh righteously and speaketh uprightly, he that despiseth the gain of oppressions, that shaketh his hands from holding of bribes, that stoppeth his ears from hearing of blood, and shutteth his eyes from seeing evil, he shall dwell on high. His place of defense shall be the munitions of rocks. Bread shall be given him. His waters shall be sure." So another way of saying that the Lord is going to see that there is no want to them that fear Him. In verse 10 he says, "The young lions do lack and suffer hunger, but they that seek the Lord shall not want any good thing." He's simply giving an example in this verse of the tremendous advantages of trusting in God. The young lions, they are the lions that are taken care of by the old lions. Their parents do their very best to take care of them. They kill and bring in the prey for the young to eat. They defend and protect the young. But there are times when young lions do lack. They suffer hunger. They may not have enough because their parents are not able to take care of them. The parents want to, the parents try, the old lions would like to, but they're not able to take care of the young. So the young do lack things, and they do suffer hunger. But in the case of the follower of God, he says, "But they that seek the Lord shall not want any good thing." The Lord is able to provide whatever our needs are. And so we have to be among those in that seek the Lord. To seek the Lord means that we actively, on our part, have a desire to want to follow Him. We're looking for Him. We're just not somebody that's sitting by indifferently and God happens to tap us on the shoulder and say, "Look, I want to bless you." We're seeking after God. We're using our energies, our efforts, our abilities, our minds in the search of God. "They that seek the Lord shall not want any good thing." God is going to provide all the things that we need, all of the good things that we need. Now, sometimes what we interpret as a need and a want and a desire is not necessarily something that's good. It's not necessarily something that's going to be good for us. We're not always able to know what's good or best for us. Sometimes we may need to do without some of the things that we're able to have, and God may take those away from us. We may need to go through some kind of chastisement, and that'll be for our good. We may need to be kept from some things that are actually going to be evil. We don't realize that they're evil, or we are not strong enough to take a stand against them as being evil, but yet God's going to protect us from them. So we really fear Him and really trust Him and really seek Him. We're going to believe that we'll not want any good thing. God's going to take care of us. That's such a wonderful, comforting thought. It is such a basic tenet in our being able to truly have faith in God that we believe this, that if we seek Him, we'll not want any good thing. God has the power, the ability to give it to us. Now, we have to first of all know that He does have the power. He can give us any good thing. There is no good thing that God cannot give us. And so if He can give it to us, then if we love Him, if we seek Him, and if He loves us, which He will, then He's going to provide it for us. God will give us any good thing. It's such a wonderful thought. It is such a basic truth. And yet it is one that is hard for us as human beings to accept. It's hard for us to believe this. We've gone through so many times in which we did not trust God. We did not believe, really, that God could and would do these things. We've looked to the world for our blessings and been disappointed. Until now, it's so difficult for us to believe that God will not have His children to want any good thing. He's going to provide for them. We'll be better provided for than the young lions. Although the old lions want to and try and do their best, they cannot take care of their young like God can take care of His children. So let's be among those that seek the Lord. Let's be among those that fear the Lord. Let's be among those that trust in the Lord. Let's taste Him. Let's see that He's good. and that he will give us these great blessings. You know, sometimes we've gone the way of the world so long, when we've allowed the world to be our standard, and we've been buffeted and been made to pay the price of sin, then it's very hard for us to believe that there's another way of life, in which God is going to not have us to want any good. It's just hard for us to believe that, and so we never really do take that first step to taste the Lord. We never really do see Him and try Him. We can't bring ourselves to trust Him. We can't bring ourselves to truly fear Him. We can't bring ourselves to really seek after Him. But that's what David is saying here. That's the point he's trying to get across. If you will just but seek after Him, if you will trust in Him, if you will taste Him, if you will see Him, if you will experience Him, then you're not going to be disappointed. He says that you're going to be blessed. You're going to have no want if you fear Him. The God shall not have you to want any good thing. And so that is the whole point here. We must allow ourselves to have enough belief, enough trust, enough faith, enough confidence in God that we're willing to try Him. And of course, we can only try Him whenever we've proven to Him that we are willing to follow after His will, that we are willing servants of His, that we are going to completely come to Him in a contrite, humble way, laying ourselves at His feet and saying, "Oh Lord, You guide me, You mold me, whatever command You have, I want to follow it. Show me what to do, allow me to see what to do, and I will do. I'm going to do whatever is necessary to be pleasing unto Thee." Then when we get to that point where we're truly asking this question, what shall we do? Just like the people on the day of Pentecost, when Peter preached that first gospel sermon, they said, "Men and brethren, what shall we do?" They had reached that point of wanting to know what to do to please this God. When we reach that point that we want to know what to do, what can we do to please our God, then we're reaching the brink of what David says here is to taste and to see, to fear, to trust. We're reaching the brink of that point where we can then be allowed to experience the great blessings. We're going to close at that point. Till next time, this is NC Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.